From WGBH Radio and PRI, this is Innovation Hub.
Innovation Hub is sponsored by State Street, partnering with institutional investors worldwide to create the way ahead.
Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Innovation often has a dual nature. Think about Twitter's power to undermine repressive regimes and promote the Kardashians. Or the fact that Facebook allows you to reconnect with old friends and makes you jealous of their awesome vacations. Today, we're investigating teams, people, and companies with dual, sometimes dueling, natures. First, an industry that has made a science of balancing fun with obsession and casual enjoyment with some serious money, gambling. Natasha Dow Scholl is a cultural anthropologist at MIT. She is the author of Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. Natasha, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kara.
How have slot machines changed over time? I'm assuming they were not always this, you know, didn't always have this many bells and whistles.
No, and in fact, in the past, they were often seen as little devices that would sort of sit in these transitory spaces in casinos, maybe next to the check-in desk in the lobby or in corridors next to an elevator. The men, and that's how it used to be, were considered the real gamblers in the heart of the casino, generating the revenues for the casino. And these were just devices to entertain their girlfriends on the periphery. And that has completely change. Today, slot machines bring in upwards of 75-85% of revenue.
Wow.
So even the destination resorts are really essentially slot barns, which is the crude term that's often given to kind of local casinos where you look in and there's just a sea of these machines.
When did the people who run casinos get smart and realize that this wasn't just a thing for, you know, the men's girlfriends to spend time doing, that like this was where the real cash was going to come in?
Technology had a huge amount to do with that shift, as did the revolution in the personal computer, a sort of lowering of this level of distrust of interacting with computers and machines. So the slot machines of today are not the one-armed bandits of the past. Inside, they're absolutely different creatures, and they can give you a absolutely different experience playing.
I'm interested in the new science of slot machines. When a manufacturer is putting together a slot machine, how are they doing it? I mean, do they have PhDs standing by saying, like, this is the way you're going to milk the optimal amount of cash from the person who is playing the slot?
Well, it can take up to 350 individuals who are involved in the design of any one new game. And it's everything from ergonomic specialists who actually design the chair that will accompany a particular slot machine, to the sound engineers who, in one company, the design team only played the sounds in the key of C. And the idea was that this would be kind of this universally pleasant key. There are choices made about the visuals. And then the most important thing is the math. And by math, what's meant there is really the game algorithms inside. And there, yes, you have the math PhDs who are often running what's called math farms, where they're simulating how well these different game algorithms work for different audiences.
As part of what these math PhDs do, are they thinking about how much you'll spend in a given day, depending on whether you make a 5-cent bet each time, or a quarter bet, or a dollar bet?
You know, it's a lot more complicated than how much someone plays. There's been a real turn to more of a profit from volume model rather than getting as much as you can from someone and then they go home after their weekend in Vegas. You're seeing locals' casinos and residents playing. So getting them to bet more in any one moment isn't the simple drive anymore. It's called Costco gambling sometimes, and the idea is to really retain someone for life. So you've seen a curious turn toward pennies, actually.
Penny slots.
Mm-hmm. Those are bringing in 50% of slot revenues are coming from penny machines.
Wow.
And now that's an example of the kind of thing that the industry was totally surprised by. And here's the catch, and this is really, if I had to sort of give one example of what distinguishes today's video slot machines from the one-armed bandits of the past. You are, for the first time on a slot machine, putting in a bet and you're getting back a portion of it almost every hand. This is a game where you put in 45 pennies, you win 30 back. You put in 30, you win 5 back. There can be a net loss, but it feels like you're constantly winning and you can play for much longer. It's about creating a smoother ride. So when you walk around a casino, you're not seeing people sitting up agitated with expressions of expectancy or thrill on their faces. You see people relaxing. One of these math PhDs spoke to me about, we want to get people to recline on our math models like it's a comfortable couch.
Did you talk to any of these math PhDs who seemed, to have misgivings about the fact that they are training people to give their money away?
That very guy did, actually, and he told me a vignette about his mother, about how he designed a machine, and she got irritated at him because it took her money too quickly, and she sort of taught him this lesson that so many other designers were learning at the same time, which is that you can ultimately get more money from a customer if you keep giving it back to them in little portions. And then he paused and he said, I'm sure that the designs that I have out there are destroying some people's lives, and we have a very addictive value proposition in our industry. So I said, well, what do you suggest? And he said, well, this isn't just the gambling industry. It's the subprime mortgage. It's so many other industries. What we need is more regulation, like in other countries, where there's some kind of safety net, and we don't let people destroy themselves.
Yeah. I'm wondering, is there a sort of sweet spot number where somebody comes in with a dollar and you let them go home with 50 cents, 80 cents? Like, is there a sweet spot number where if you let them go home with that amount of money, you'll make some as the casino, but they'll also come back to you?
For every person, it's different. And this is why another really key innovation that's affecting the gambling industry is data tracking. You can track individuals' own preferences and what their sweet spots and pain points are, and really get an understanding, because you've got this rich, almost like laboratory, people are just sitting there pressing the button really fast for long periods of time, and you're gathering all this information on them over time. And as more and more game content comes to live in the server, you're going to be able to tailor, and you're not going to have to ask this question of what's the one number that will derive the most revenue from the population. It's far more fine-tuned to the individual and their own history.
Well, but does that mean that you would go into a casino and you'd have to put in Natasha Scholl, because they'd have to know that your number is 70 and my number is 60?
85% of people play with what are called loyalty cards, which are essentially, you put your card and it says, you don't need to type in Natasha Scholl. It says, hi, Natasha.
So are they already starting to do that? Understand your pain points are, understanding what your sweet spot is in terms of luring you back to the casino.
That's been around for quite a while. Harrah's had a really interesting program. It failed in certain respects, but the logic is interesting. And the logic was, by law, you can't change the odds of a game mid-course. So someone sits down and they commence play, you can't change the odds. However, if you call something a sort of marketing program that's overlaid on top of the game, you can kind of work to circumvent that law. And they came up with this program called Luck Ambassadors that would sense, Kara is approaching her pain point. She's going to leave. We know that statistically. Let's dispatch a live Luck Ambassador over to the machine to give her a $10 bonus, which is essentially interfering with the odds, but it's being done through this marketing kind of program. And that existed, 10, 15 years ago. The reason it didn't work, by the way, is that people just wanted to be left alone to continue playing. They're like, go away. I'll put in my own $10. I don't want to go stand in line at a kiosk. So there was some failure to it. But the general idea, we're seeing engineers return to that and find kind of crafty ways to build these sort of marketing modules. Integrate is the word that's being used. Integrated with the actual game algorithm, so that in effect, it is sort of changing the odds and the experience.
I want to expand this out a bit and look at what we think of as harmless games like Candy Crush or Angry Birds that you play on your phone or your tablet. What about those games hooks us in?
One way of talking about slot machines is that the way that they are hooking you in is actually similar to the Candy Crush. And both of them are tapping into what some psychologists call flow. And they speak about it as an optimal human experience. And this is a sensation that you have when you're climbing a mountain or drawing something, or you're listening to a piece of music and you're totally engaged by the next move. The gambling, if you look closely at what it's like, it breaks down into the very same criteria as flow. And Candy Crush is the same. And you're attending to just the next thing so that you can forget about everything else. Time falls away. Space falls away. It's this mode of completely focused attention. Sometimes a sense of your own body even falls away. And I think that all those games partake in this human capacity for absorption. The thing is that those games are formatting that experience toward a certain destination. So it's not the top of the mountain or doing some kind of jazz riff. By the end of it, you sort of wake up to yourself and you're sitting there and your eyes are dry and you really got to pee and your wallet's empty.
Is there anything good about the fact that we now know how these games work, that we understand the science of them?
Well, I think as people work more and more, and I see my own work as contributing to this, it will become possible to explain to legislators and the public what is going on in this exchange and that it's actually intimately affecting people. And yes, it's true that you're not taking a substance, obviously, into your body. But if you're sitting there playing 1,200 hands an hour, and if you understand how carefully engineered the algorithms are, I think that's important for the public to understand that and then have a conversation about what kinds of manipulation. And it is. I mean, I don't think that's a stretch to say that this is behavioral manipulation. What kinds do we want to allow, or do we think that a state should, you know, fill its budget shortfall with, and what kind is okay?
Have you seen anybody using the sort of science of behavioral manipulation to encourage good behavior?
We're starting to see that more and more. And this kind of threw me for a loop after my book came out about 18 months ago. I started getting these emails. One was from somebody who was at the forefront of this movement toward MOOCs, online education. They said, you know, I read really closely this part of your book on luck ambassadors, and it seems to me like the industry has really figured out this attention capture issue, which is really the issue we face as online educators. What if we could have an education ambassador who would sense when you're reaching your pain point of learning and dispatch a live education ambassador over to say, hey, I see your interest is flagging. Can I help you with that math problem? I haven't resolved for myself what, you know, is that creepy or is that actually a good thing? And many other kinds of companies have come to me as well saying, you know, this could be this sort of gamification, even this monetization strategies in the industry could be used for good.
Natasha Dauschel is a cultural anthropologist at MIT. She's the author of Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. Natasha Scholl, thanks so much for coming
Thank in. Thank you, Kara.
Coming up next, the twisted tale of a game that I'm betting you've played.
It was a mat, and it was more like chess, where the players stood in stocking feet, and they had different colors, and they had to move as if they were the chess pieces.
From PRI and WGBH Radio, I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub, online at innovationhub.org.